Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
And happy Monday, everybody. Welcome to the Chuck and Julie Show, grassroots show, truth straight up with Julie Hayden and Chuck Bonnywell. Chuck is in hair and makeup. He'll be joining us as soon as he gets done there. He's not going to be nominated for an Academy Award makeup thing. Hey, the show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. Lot to talk about today. I was just sort of commenting to Thomas before the show started. For a weekend and a Monday, it was kind of a busy news day. So we have the Supreme Court arguments today in an important First Amendment case. And no shock, some of the liberal judges say it's okay for the government not just to censor, but to coerce and prior restraint. That First Amendment, it doesn't apply when Joe Biden's administration is, you know, has something to say or doesn't want someone to say something. So we got that to talk about. We've got the bloodbath backlash. And I submit, again, Trump knows exactly what he's doing, just like the Oscar thing with Jimmy Kimmel, right? Where Trump is like, you know, he put something out on Truth Social. Jimmy Kimmel reads it. Kimmel looks like an idiot. The Hollywood people are exposed for the wokesters and Trump gets a ton of publicity. Bloodbath comment, I think the same exact thing. And then wanted to also talk about Krista Kafer, Rhino extraordinaire. You will be glad to know that the woman who filed the lawsuit that failed tremendously trying to keep Trump off the ballot is going to save the Republican Party from itself. I mean, we're all just going to be really glad she did. So we'll talk about it later. And also then at 3:30, this should be interesting. Jeffrey Katz, he's a religious philosopher, rules to live by. I'm always say this wrong. Okay. He's a
Jewish theologian in the 12th century.
Right. So he, his rules to live by. So we'll be talking to him about that. But first, let's talk about Supreme Court. So this was, there's so much going on, and some of the court cases are kind of tricky to follow, but this is a huge one. This stems from a combination of what the Twitter files, some of the testimony in Congress, thanks to the Republicans, from Zuckerberg, some of the
They basically tried to prevent anything about election interference, about COVID-19 or the origins of COVID-19.
Hunter Biden laptop.
Hunter Biden laptop.
Actually, and just about, you know, anything you could think of that they didn't want, it came out, coerced the social media companies to not put stuff. And it was more than just like saying, hey, guys, could you maybe think about not saying that, right? I mean, there were implicit threats, right? They were considering legislation.
Well, there was pending legislation. They know this one, I don't like this comment, I don't like this comment. And then they placed FBI agents, or at least former agents, into the ones.
And they had direct lines into some of these organizations too, right? So, I mean, they were monitoring Americans, they were running surveillance on Americans, and then actively, essentially, ordering the companies to censor them. So a couple of attorney generals, very courageous guys, filed a lawsuit, which is now, and initially, the lower court and then an appellate court said that the government could not do that. And it issued an injunction prohibiting the Biden administration from coercing and calling on social media companies to censor. So it goes to the Supreme Court, where it did not, people are like saying, did not get that good of a reception, with some of the liberal judges being stupid First Amendment. But I want to play the first soundbite where this is Senator Eric Schmidt, who was one of the AGs who filed it, sort of explained what's going on. So Thomas, if we could please play the SCOTUS soundbite.
Hello, I'm Senator Eric Schmidt. When I was Missouri's Attorney General, I filed the seminal lawsuit Missouri versus Biden, which is now called Murphy versus Missouri. It's going to be heard in the United States Supreme Court on Monday, and it's the biggest free speech case in American history, pitting the government against the people. At the core of the lawsuit is the idea that the federal government can't outsource censorship to social media companies to trample on American speech, which is exactly what they were doing. At the behest of some of the highest-ranking government officials in the country, the biggest social media companies in the world censored speech on topics like the lab leak theory, the Hunter Biden laptop story, the origins of COVID, the efficacy of masks, and much, much more. The discovery that came out in that case is shocking, to say the least. It shows it wasn't just one or two officials that were working with social media companies to censor American voices. It was a leviathan of officials and agencies, more appropriately dubbed a vast censorship enterprise. This case cuts at the very core of what it means to be an American and what we believe in this country. The federal government should not be censoring American speech. And they don't get to end run around the Constitution by having social media platforms do it for them. It's my hope that the Supreme Court will side with Missouri, Louisiana, and the entire country and affirm the district court's injunction to halt this censorship. And know this, I will always fight to protect your First Amendment rights.
I have many thoughts on this, because on one hand, you know, having worked in the media for years, there were times, I would say not frequent, but certainly not unheard of, where, say, you would be reporting. I remember one time I was reporting on a murder investigation, and we found some stuff out and we were going to report it. And I got a call from the lead detective who asked us to please not report it yet because they were going to be doing something. And if we reported what we were going to report, they were afraid that it would tip off the potential suspect in the case, right? So we talked it over and we decided not to. But keep in mind, that was an extremely serious discussion and an extremely, and the investigator knew that, right? The investigator started out by saying, I know I can't tell you to do this. I'm asking you to do this. There were no threats. There was no anything, right? There was another time I was covering a case where we got an interview, and I don't want to go into it because I don't want to reveal who the person was, but we got an interview with somebody who had been involved in a child murder, and unbeknownst to me, the person, although understandably, was suicidal. And the attorney called me and said, look, I can't tell you what to do, but I can ask you to please not run that interview. If you do, the person is suicidal and this could have horrible consequences, right? And once again, there was a serious discussion at pretty high levels at the TV station, and we decided not to do it. So I guess that's one thing, right? And that happens not uncommonly in the media. Again, I don't think it's frequent. Well, who God knows anymore. They just call them up and tell them what to say or do, right? It doesn't matter. But back then, but this was different. This was the federal government essentially having its own backdoor office in these social media companies. And it was basically telling them stuff they were even unaware of. And we saw in the Twitter files, there were communications where even some of the Twitter people who were the enemy at the time were kind of like, you know, this makes me kind of uncomfortable, right? And the government basically said, we don't care. On the other hand, though, Chuck, how does it, from a legal point of view, is it, are you coercing? Are you persuading? Kind of like, you know, those people persuaded us not to run those things. I mean, how...
Well, there's so many things, you know, it's pornography. You know it when you see it. You know it when the government's putting its big fat finger on the scale. When they ask you politely not to run that, that's one thing. When they send their agents and everything else, and they're promising or to withhold aid or give you aid. They gave them money and so forth. You can tell what the difference is between the two. And do you need a bright line test? I don't think you do. But we're dead. And the First Amendment is dead. You could tell that. The Fifth Circuit continued an injunction against the Biden administration. The Supreme Court lifted it. That takes five votes, and there are three votes.
Oh, that's a good point. So five people. So let me back up so I understand this. So typically, if there's thinking that they might uphold the injunction, they wouldn't have lifted it. But the fact that five people voted to lift it means at least five people means that there are probably at least five people who are seriously considering overturning.
And I listened to some of the discussion. It was three, each is a Witches of Eastwick, the Libs, and
Amy Coney Barrett.
Amy Coney Barrett, who I'm beginning to hate, who were all just attacking the states. And the conservative justices said very little. Meaning that this has been already, the bad news is already out. They know they can't win. They know that it's these 5-4, if not 6-3. It was an awful discussion. They're like, oh, wait a minute, how do you tell the difference between two needles and one needle rather than kind of looking at the forest? First Amendment is dead. And said.
Well, it not only is, here's the thing that is really alarming. So you have these elites who think, you know, it'd be funny if Trump wins if it goes the other way, right? But you have these elites who hold positions in these social media companies now, and I'm including Twitter. Twitter is pretty good right now, but Elon Musk obviously, you know, has his concerns, financial concerns he has to think about too. And so you have them who they decide what we can or cannot hear. One of the most alarming things to me, though, is you look at young kids coming up or young people who don't uphold the First Amendment,
no,
right?
Really,
that if it hurts somebody's feeling, I mean, it's all, I mean, to me, it was, it's one of the strongest things in this country, right? Now, the good news is we have Truth Social, right? And I think it has, it's doing well. I think places, there are places like that, like Rumble, like the great folks at BBS who are not going to censor.
If the government can now do this, they can shut down everything. I mean, this isn't.
If this gives a, that's a scary part. This will give them the okay.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's just, and hearing the discussion of these, you know, Brown Jackson.
No.
And talking about, well, this would restrain government. No kidding, really?
Yeah.
Why do you think you have a Bill of Rights?
Yeah.
It's a constrained goddamn government.
It's like, no, no, the government knows. Well, and particularly in cases like this, where, as you said, all of the things that were, it wasn't like, whatever, to save somebody from committing suicide, right? They were trying to push a narrative to bury another narrative. And that all turned out to be a lie, right? Everything that they were, everything.
Well,
that we were...
I have no problem in some manners on, let's say, the laptop that the 51 intelligence officers conspired, got together, and put out this bullshit thing saying that this had all the hallmarks of Russian disinformation. That didn't bother me. What bothered me is that the Miranda Devine report was squashed. It wasn't just the government saying anything. Oh. It's saying, no, don't let anybody hear the other side.
Right.
You can't hear the other. You can't hear.
And that, decide that, for yourself. We're not even going to
yes,
let it out there.
Yeah. I mean,
right.
It's just, and that the court justices don't get that is pathetic.
Well, and this from Sandra. Does she not know why we have the Constitution?
No,
for the
she
people.
Thinks it's a
pesky thing that gets in the way of her telling people what to do.
Century-old bullshit.
Right. No, so that's alarming. And so now, as I understand it, the court will issue a ruling probably sometime in April, maybe. I mean, they have to like June, right? So so who knows? Yeah, it'll be...
You can always count on the conservatives to screw you. You really can. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, it's the same thing as Republicans go in and they have the House, the Senate, and the President. And they say, oh, no, we can't do it because there's 60 votes in the Senate and we have to get that. And then the Democrats get all three and they get all their bills through. How? Because they threaten to get rid of the filibuster unless they allow them to do it.
Uh-huh. Oh, I know.
So they get, you know, all the bullshit green.
Uh-oh, we're gonna have to separate the dogs, and my daughter's dog is staying with us here. So Charlene says, exactly, Chuck, maybe they're controlled opposition.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it is important going into the election. So I my concern is, you're right, that the Biden administration will take this as, okay, well, we can do whatever we
it's
want
not the
now.
The Biden administration, every administration after that.
Right.
Trump included.
Well, and it's a deep state that's buried inside, too, that's controlling
this stuff. Well, you
got
your
stuff.
Own deep state. Does that make any better? No.
Nah. Sandra says, exactly, Chuck, I agree with you, GD Republicans. Well, let me switch to some happy news, okay?
Happy news.
Happy news.
Julie gives us a wonderful example about Rev's phone. She said, okay, some good news and the bad news. The bad news is that it's completely broken. We're going to have to replace it. Okay. I said, what's the good news, Julie? Well, there is no good news.
Good news is Rev gets a new phone. I guess I was looking at it from Rev's point of view. From his point of view, he gets a new phone. I know, it was kind of just as a side. I mean, I call this guy who's great. He says, yeah, no, that's a degenerative chip base. I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound good. And I'm like, what causes it? And he goes, these things are mass produced.
Crap.
So yeah, it's just, you got a crap phone. And he's like,
and they're all crap. So
yeah,
really,
yeah, that's what he said too. And they're increasingly becoming crap. So just get used to it. So at any rate, real good news. So that you saw the kerfuffle, I'm sure you heard of over the weekend. So Trump gives a speech in Detroit, and he's talking about the Chinese influence and the plans to build these massive EV factories in China, or in China, in Mexico, and then they're going to go screw over American consumers. And he, and we'll play what you, what Trump actually said, but he uses the word bloodbath. Now, people use the word bloodbath all the time. It just simply means, you know, a disastrous result for somebody, right? The media uses it all the time. Everybody uses it all the time. Donald Trump uses it now, and they take it completely out of context, and say, Donald,
98% of the
nine, okay, and say Trump is it's a dog whistle for Trump's people to
country.
kill everyone, I guess. I'm not sure what
Head
they
back to Charlottesville.
have back and just kill everybody. So but Trump again played it perfectly, I think. And I don't think we'll talk and you get what you guys think. I don't think it's an accident. I don't think Trump before we were never sure whether it was clever or lucky or I think he's gotten smarter. I think he
Oh, yeah.
okay, we can talk about that. But let's play. This is what CNN and their moron Democrat strategist Maria Cardona had to say about Trump using the word bloodbath in a complicated explanation. So if we could please play the CNN
Are you going to play
lies.
Trump's thing?
Yes.
What Alice is saying reflects every single kind of pretzel that Republicans are bending themselves into trying to dismiss it, spin it, or try to embrace it. But the fact of the matter is, Paula, Donald Trump has a history of this dark, violent, dangerous rhetoric, and we already saw the result of what happens when he uses that rhetoric. Because even though every single Republican that is asked is going to try to spin it and pretend that it really had nothing to do with a real bloodbath, his cult MAGA supporters and followers totally know exactly what he was telling them. They demonstrated that on January 6th, and the only thing that Trump said is, come to the Capitol. It's going to be wild. We have to take back our country. Imagine what will happen when he loses after Trump says things like, it's going to be a bloodbath if I lose. That is dangerous. It's irresponsible. And he should not get away with it. And certainly Republicans should not be trying to dismiss it.
I mean, what an idiot. It's like all of us cult MAGA followers, right? Us cult MAGA followers understand that whenever Trump uses the word bloodbath,
Or go kill.
we're supposed to go kill our neighbors.
Or,
Or I'm not sure who we're supposed to
and
go
except
kill.
the only person killed was a
Well,
Trump supporter. But no.
exactly. Well, and the January 6th, and you got to love how they stick to it, right? The
Yep.
January 6th has completely fallen apart. I mean, even the polls show people are like, that was a big nothing burger. And now more information. Not only was it a nothing burger, it was not an insurrection. It certainly wasn't a violent bloodbath, but it looks like it was all orchestrated by the Democrats in the first place. So as that, but they don't care. They stick to that. And it just is so funny. But now we're going to play to you what, for you, what Trump actually said. Here is the excerpt from the speech where he was talking about it. So, Thomas, if we could please play what Trump really said.
China now is building a couple of massive plants where they're going to build the cars in Mexico and think that they're going to sell those cars into the United States with no tax at the border. Let me tell you something to China. If you're listening, President Xi, and you and I are friends, but he understands the way I deal, those big monster car manufacturing plants that you're building in Mexico right now, and you think you're going to get that, you're going to not hire Americans, and you're going to sell the cars to us. Now, we're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole, that's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars. They're building massive factories.
He's talking about a bloodbath for the car industry, right? But
No, it's a little broader than that. He's saying to, if I don't get elected, it'll be a bloodbath, and the cars will just be, a small part of it. So you can take what he said, and if you wish to, spin it out of all control, say no, he wasn't just saying autos. He said that's just going to be part of it. But we all know what he's talking about. But they don't care.
they use the word bloodbath all the time
Well,
themselves.
they're free to.
Exactly. And so, and here's the thing though, it didn't work. I think there's been a backlash against it. Joe Scarborough from MSNBC tried to tweet it. So then Elon Musk said, you know, Donald Trump is calling for all of his MAGA cult supporters to go kill everybody. And Elon Musk, even on Twitter, was like, wrong, wrong. And he posted the whole speech, right? And then Joe Scarborough took it down. Right. And so they've been called out, and yet once again, they're being called out for the fake news because they get so crazed. Their heads explode with Trump derangement syndrome, and they go off the deep end and they look completely unhinged.
Well, there is no neutral people you're trying to convey anymore. You either hate Trump or you like Trump. Either Trump is the worst thing in the world, or he's the best. So they'll go to all the people who hate Trump, and they'll go, yeah. And we'll go, this is bullshit. Yeah. And that's how it's going to go for the next 8 months.
Well, but again, I think it's kind of like the racist, right? They're not calling him a racist anymore.
No, sure they are.
I think the for the people kind of who are not paying that much attention. I mean, here's where I think Trump won, right? I had no idea Trump had given a speech about the auto industry. I didn't know that China was building these massive EV plants. Now I do, right? I mean, I think so. Trump manages when they go off the deep end and they're unhinged. Oh, we're all going to go kill everybody. Which I mean, everybody, Trump supporters and even independents, and I would say even Democrats who live next to Republicans are not worried that their neighbor is going to go kill them now, right? They're probably not. So everybody knows that that's an unhinged thing to say. And when they say it so seriously and they're warning us about it, I think people tend to dismiss them even more than they do. Here's from Charlene. Bad news, First Amendment is gone. Good news, we have the Second Amendment. It's not in Colorado for very much longer. And then Charlene, it's an operation. Predictive program is to a civil war, getting us used to the word bloodbath. Their psyop is so pathetically worded. They're sticking to something that's fallen apart. Yeah, well, they have nothing else, but they are sticking to it. And I think again, I think Trump, I don't know that he deliberately inserted the word bloodbath into his speech, right? Because he seems to speak a lot extemporaneously there. But I also think Trump knows that anything he says, they're going to twist and exploit, and he then can, sort of twist, let them hang, hang themselves, basically, right? When they say such ridiculous things that aren't true. And so from there, like, we all know how violent it was. Like you said, the only person who was killed was a Trump supporter, right? And they keep saying all the police officers. Yeah, from Charlene, it was extemporaneous. Okay, I didn't see the whole speech. But like I said, where Trump wins, I think, is there are probably millions of people now who also didn't see the speech, had no idea it was going on, and who now do, and whose opinion. Again, if you hate Trump, you're already out there saying, well, Trump's telling Republican supporters to go kill everybody. But if you're anybody else, you're like, those idiot Democrats once are going off the deep end.
Well,
Are you
one
big?
time, if you're trying to define Trump, this would help define Trump. He's no defining Trump anymore. So what they say on CNN and MSNBC just doesn't matter. It
No.
just doesn't
Well,
matter.
here's from James. Bloodbath means massive inflation, censorship, more wars, depression, race wars, dead babies, and the end of us as a viable country.
There you go. Pretty good. I like it.
And then Charlene says to me, exactly. I didn't know how massive the Chinese factories about the monster Chinese trucks until now. Yeah. So again, I think Trump plays them pretty well. And it's
They play
kind of,
themselves well.
yeah, I think if the more they become unhinged, the more they kind of talk about, threats to democracy. Like, where did I read a thing? It's kind of like, oh, you're rearranging your
Rearranging the
rearranging
picture.
that rearranging the furniture. So Putin holds a transparent election and wins, and he's a dictator. Zelensky cancels elections, right? And he's the one we must give more money to for
For
democracy.
democracy's sake.
For democracy's sake. So, we don't know about that. And then briefly, before we get Jeffrey Katz on, you want to talk a little bit about Krista Kiefer?
Well, this is great. I don't know if you guys watch the Rhino site,
RhinoWatchCO.com.
rhinowatch.com, which is just great. It's the only website out there that actually is for the grassroots, and I enjoy it and try to contribute to it when I
Yep,
can.
pick up our shows every so often.
But it's the only one, and therefore, the one thing that the left media and the Anschutz Rhino media have in common is they hate the grassroots, and the grassroots have never had an outlet for themselves, and now they do, and so they can't stand it. So they had Kelly Maher last week come on the big editorial on how awful it was, although they never say Rhino Watch because Colorado, because they don't want driving people to the site. And so then Krista Kiefer came on
So,
saying that.
Mr. Kafer, keep in mind. So, Kelly Maher was a longtime Anschutz media complex mouthpiece, right? Establishment mouthpiece. Krista Kafer, lest you forget, is one of the traitor rhinos who filed the lawsuit trying to keep Trump off the ballot,
And she
literally humiliatingly.
periodically, when she was on the radio, she said, I'm no longer a Republican, and I am a Republican. But she said, okay, once this train wreck of the grassroots will come up and clean, they show a, she did this nice cartoon with a car going into a tree, not saying the car already went into the tree or the grassroots wouldn't have been able to take over.
Well, Chris McKeever, what she's saying is that the grassroots were destroying the party. Yeah, and of course, they blame everything on Dave Williams, who, in our opinion, has been the best thing to happen to grassroots Republicans and, frankly, the state of Colorado in a long time. So don't be fooled by all the various psyops out there trying to get you to get rid of Dave. That would be the biggest mistake the Republican Party and Republicans could make. But at any rate, so they blame him and they blame grassroots people for everything. And the gist of the article was, thank God for people like Krista Kafer, because they're going to be able to come back after the grassroots drives the party into the dirt and save it. So my question is, okay, Krista, number one, Donald Trump is the most, not just the most popular Republican candidate, he's the most popular, according to a lot of polls, candidate in the country.
And she hates him.
And you hate him. So you think because you don't like him that the rest of the country, you are vastly outnumbered, but because you don't like him, no one else should be able to vote for him. I mean, the arrogance, the audacity for somebody to think that, right? And then once they're slapped down by the Supreme Court, to not say, well, maybe that wasn't the world's best idea. Maybe we should have done that, but to double down and say, I don't want you to vote for the.
But what I love about it is that Rhino Watch is the only anti-establishment, which means both the Rhinos and the Democratic Party, and they've had no opposition. People like Krista Kafer have attacked grassroots all the time. Same with Kelly Maher. But no one's ever scratched back, and Rhino Watch does. So
right. Yeah. Well, this is from Charlene. Love RhinoWatchCO.com. From Sandra, absolutely agree with you regarding Dave Williams. He is the best thing for the Colorado GOP. And then Charlene, isn't she an Ann Schutz mouthpiece? Yes, Kelly Maher is. I mean, they're
No, she's not a Kelly Maher. She's not. She's an Ann Schutz.
Well, she's establishment.
No, she's not even that. She's just part of the left media.
Kelly Maher?
Oh, I'm sorry. Kelly Maher is part of the Anschutz media. Yes.
Right. She is. Yeah. They were quoting her in The Hill talking about the whole Ken Buck thing, which all they're trying to do is turn that in. There's a lot more, I think, that's going to come out on that. They're just trying to turn that whole thing, though, into an anti-Lauren Boebert thing.
Right.
But yeah. Krista Kafer, I don't think she's not an Anschutz mouthpiece because I'm not sure. Krista Kafer.
She's nothing. She barely scratches out a living. I don't know what she does.
She's a Republican so that she can be the Denver Post's
Republican commentator.
Right, which again, it shows where the Denver Post is coming. I mean, John Caldera, by not even insisting, but just sort of saying, hey, there are two genders, was fired by the Denver Post.
That'd be collegial.
Yeah, for being too conservative. So you got to look at Krista Kafer. So, I mean, it's just a ridiculous article but there are people out there who think that the establishment is going to swoop in and save us from the grassroots.
But they already destroyed it. So I'm not sure what they're going to swoop in with.
I mean, we haven't won a statewide election.
In 2016.
I mean, we have
we have a minority.
Such a minority. Yeah. It's like, how are you going to, I guess they could make it even worse, but it's just ludicrous. And it's sort of like some of these establishment people, some of them, I think, are doing it because that's what their paycheck is, right? In Colorado, the donor money largely comes from establishment, uniparty, open border rhinos. And are the divisive ones,
really,
right?
Just filling some ground.
And so I get, if you're a consultant person, that, you know, you don't want to attack Phil Anschutz or his ideas because they're
George Brockler, when we first knew him, was pretty much on the grassroots side of things. Then he ran and found out it was no money. So then he decided to become an Anschutzite.
Right. Well, and yeah, I mean, that's kind of a political reality. And thank God for people like Dave Williams, who figured out you're not going to please these people. They're never going to like a grassroots person. Right. And so you might as well say the truth. Right.
Yes.
But Krista Kafer, I just don't. You know, she was at KNUS and she was kind of out there. And I just don't understand. I think she really thinks that. I think she really thinks that the Republican Party at some point is going to turn to her, one of the worst traitors in the Republican Party in Colorado ever, trying to make it so that no one could vote for the candidate of their choice, right? Only the candidate of her choice, that somehow she's just waiting in the wings to come in and save us. It's like, thank you, but no thanks. You know, I don't know. It's like, maybe she's got that Narcon stuff or something I don't know, but it's ridiculous. But
ketamine.
I think, yeah, ketamine. They'll give us ketamine. But it is.
I want to try ketamine.
No, it
what
is.
What do you mean? Elon Musk says it's great.
So I don't know that I would rely on Elon
I
Musk
totally,
being
totally
my
rely on
reliable.
Clint.
Okay, so this from Sandra. Typical Krista Kiefer, Norma Anderson, Ad
Yeah.
Ken Buck, Dick Wadhams, and on to the POS bottom feeder Colorado rhinos. Exactly. And here's the thing, they would rather destroy the party than let somebody
Already
else.
have stored the
Well,
party.
exactly. But rather than let the party try to come back, they would rather keep it destroyed
Yeah,
so at least
that's why
they
they
can
hate Rhino
control.
Watch. They
Right.
hate getting some clapback. And they all call it now the GOP's website and kind of go, I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't know. Well, again, it's all this attack against the grassroots, and that's kind of like Mike Pence, right? Mike Pence
Oh,
comes out.
yeah.
I'm not gonna endorse Trump. Oh, there's a shock.
Thought you were.
like, but all five people, like his wife and kids, would follow him.
I don't think his wife likes him.
Well, I don't think his wife is going to vote for who he says,
No,
right?
no,
I mean, but again, in the media, it's kind of like this bloodbath thing. They report all this. You know, Nikki Haley, by the way, has completely dropped out of sight,
no.
hasn't she? I mean, well, maybe she's trying to figure out what to do with all
What
of her
board
money.
she get on?
Oh, Jacob, does Jacob raise your hand? Hey, Jacob, go ahead.
Remember when he said there's good people on both sides? He took a
Right.
speech that maybe 100 million, no, maybe 10 million people saw and turned it into a billion people watching it. And that's what I think happened here. I think he did it on purpose. He said that word bloodbath because it would be run over and over and over again. And when the people would listen to the whole thing, they would see, oh, the car industry really is in trouble.
Yeah.
So
Right.
that's how he spread the word.
I
And
think
the
you're.
Democrats.
Go ahead.
Why? No, I'm just saying the Democrats are dumb. You cry wolf, you cry wolf, you cry wolf. And eventually people get sick of it.
I think so too, and I think the Oscar thing was the same way too, where he put something on Truth Social. Jimmy Kimmel reads it, so maybe who knows, a few thousand people would have seen it on Truth Social. Then millions now know about it, and millions know that the Hollywood people look like fools clapping and hating Donald Trump. Right? It's like as if the movie industry isn't sinking and shooting itself in the foot enough. So, hey
Yeah.
Jacob, we have Jeffrey Katz on, so we're going to let you go. But thank you for the comment. All right, so we have Jeffrey Katz with us. He is a religious philosopher, and he has a new book out. And I'm going to Rules to Live By. May
Let
not.
Jeffrey pronounce it.
Yeah, Jeffrey, you can. Hey, yes, exactly. Rules to Live By. We will let you. I was looking up on trying to figure out how to pronounce this. I was familiar with the name, but I never had to say it out loud. So, why don't you tell us the name of your book and thank you for
Maimonides.
your show? How? What?
It's Maimonides.
Okay. All right. Guide to a Wonderful Life. Yeah, so let me just start off. Why don't you explain to folks? Chuck knew. Chuck Jeffrey, by the way, is a historian as well. So
Everybody's a
he
historian.
knew. I did not know. And so why don't you explain maybe who he is and then talk to us a little bit about your book? Because I think we could all anymore use some rules to help live a wonderful life.
Absolutely. Thanks. It's great to be here with you guys. So, Maimonides lived about 800 years ago, but his stuff continues to be studied, first of all, certainly throughout Jewish schools around the world, also in universities. He was a very interesting guy. He was both the premier doctor of his age. He was basically the doctor to the king of Egypt, which was the Sultan in Cairo back
And
then, about
Saladin.
800 years ago.
And he was a physician to Saladin.
He was the greatest doctor of his age, and he was also the greatest, one of the greatest spiritualists and philosophers, theologians, rabbis of his era. Universities, his work is still studied in universities. Every major university in the world basically is familiar with and studies his work. He was at the crossroads between, the three major Western religions. Thomas Aquinas took a lot of his work in the Summa Theologica and started with what Maimonides had done in the Guide to the Perplexed as a foundation. What I've done is I've collected all of his practical wisdom kind of in one volume. I mean, he had a very tough life. The first half of his life, Maimonides spent running away from religious fanatics who either wanted to kill him or wanted to get him to convert. He was born in Spain, and then the Almohads, which were an extremist Islamic sect, took over Spain at that time. He was born in Madrid, and he spent the first half of his life basically wandering through forests and running away through kind of rivers and stuff. And half of his work was done during that period. And he even writes in his work, by the way, if you notice some small errors in this work, because I'm not writing under the most optimal circumstances. I'm being chased through the jungle, you know, so, and yet through all that, he, when the dust cleared and he settled in Cairo, you know, in the second half of his life, again, he became the premier doctor of his age and one of the greatest philosophers and spiritualists of all time. So he really was an incredible guy. And the rules he laid down for,
I have one small,
like, how we can guide her.
One small correction. Mm-hmm. He's born, sure, in Cordoba, not Madrid.
Cordova, yes. Did I say Madrid? Thank you. I stand correct. He was born in Cordova. Thank you. I wonder why I said Madrid. I was thinking Spain, I guess. Yeah, he was born in Cordova, of course. And also, the date of his birth is a little bit in controversy. 1135 is the popular date, which is the date I give in the book. Some people think he was born in 1138, but he was definitely born in Cordova. As a matter of fact, in Cordova, they say, it's a very happy place. In the street where he was born, they have a great statue of him. And they also, it's a place of, I've not been there myself, but that street in Cordova where he was born is a place of great international goodwill, I understand. And because he's at the crossroads of the three religions, you know, because he himself worked in the golden age of Islam and what his work, and then he kind of was working in that Islamic milieu with all his Islamic colleagues. And then, you know, his work wound up being bequeathed to kind of Christian Europe, and Thomas Aquinas and the others took it from there. So he's really at the crossroads of the three civilizations. And Maimonides is the one post-biblical figure who is really celebrated and revered by all of the three major Western religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. So
I went to school at the Universidad de Salamanca, and I have been to Cordoba and a street, and it is a very joyful place. So
you can attest to it.
I can attest.
That was a few years. That's just so a couple
wonderful.
Years. Ago.
Wow! Wow.
I told you Chuck was a historian. Well, so talk about then some of these rules.
Well, I want to start off with something else, which is related to that, because this is why I really wanted to get you on about the rules, and we may have to be back on because we probably don't have enough time to go through all of it, but. When I was in eighth grade in biblical school, Episcopalian, they taught us the Sermon on the Mount. And so I'm sitting there going, okay. And he said, okay, you know, if it says you shall not kill, well, if you get angry at your brother, that still violates. I'm going, what? What do you mean if I just get angry? It's the same as killing. And then they said, if you get hit, you know, turn to the other cheek. You go, that's not going to work in grade school. And then they finally went to the statement of, and they slightly changed it, but, you know, it says you shall not commit adultery, but really lusting after a woman in your heart is adultery. And they kind of expanded it saying, you know, you can not only think, you know, not do bad things, but you can't think bad things. And going, then there's no free will. There's nothing. If I can never think anything,
well, how can I
be a virtuous person? And I walked out there thinking, and this is what I was saying today, these people have nothing to offer me about how then shall I live, because they're giving me bromides that, and I finally found a quote from Oliver Wendell Holmes, who said, Sermon on the Mount may be the flag that we sail under, but it sure isn't the rudder we steer the boat by. And I'm going, that's right. And so, you know, Christianity does not do much for giving you the rudder. And it sounds like Maimonides did. And so I can't wait to hear how.
Yeah, no, that's all amazing. You know, Maimonides wanted to give people some basic rules because, you know, kind of like these days, people are almost like ships that have lost their compass, yeah. And that has not made people any happier. No. So these rules can really turn people's life around. Like, for example, you know, Maimonides is known, he put a lot of his wisdom, not only into many writings, but also into some expressions like, you know, I mean, for example, you know, give a man a fish and you feed him for a day, teach him to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. That's right. Maimonides, and that's his number one rule of charity. And he talks about his famous 8 levels of charity. And the highest level is teaching someone to be self-sufficient so he will not need charity any longer. In terms of like real practicality, another expression of his was, the risk of a wrong decision is preferable to the terror of indecision.
Right. Yeah.
He was very practical. And he knew that like just the ability to make decisions, you don't have to be right all the time. And of course, we all make mistakes and we're all human. And of course, we all do. But just the willingness to make decisions, that's such an important facet of life. You know, another expression of his was lose with truth and right rather than gain with falsehood and wrong. Because he knew, even though you might trick me this time and you might get a short-term advantage, it's not going to do you any good in the long run. Because in the long run, your integrity is going to be compromised and like no one's going to want to deal with you. You're going to suffer personally and professionally. So like he, by following his basic rules of character development, and they're really simple things, but people have to train themselves. Like for example, if you get comfortable being able to make decisions, if you become a trustworthy person who speaks the truth and is transparent and people know is not tricking them, if you're a reliable person, you are always, if you say you're going to do something, your word has to be your bond. Now, how rare are you if you have just those three simple qualities? You know, you're reliable, you're trustworthy, and that you know how to, you're comfortable making decisions. Anyone who develops just those, aside from whatever IQ person may have or whatever technical skills you may have, you are just going to skyrocket in your career if you have those basic skills. So it's just so amazing how the most basic things in life sometimes are so key. And you say, oh, well, those things are so easy. Yeah, they're so easy, but nobody does them. And nobody.
Right,
does.
Right.
And you're right. And anymore, it's particularly in the political world.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, the political, or even in any place, you look around these days, and those used to be kind, when people, I think, talk about, you know, we're losing our country, sort of at the heart, that's the kind of stuff they're talking about, right? They're talking about that used to be, everybody agreed that those were good things, right?
Well, they didn't necessarily agree, and certainly Christianity did not teach some of those things, and one of the things they didn't teach.
All right,
let me finish this. You know, when you see somebody on the street begging for money for alcohol or food or something, and you want to bring out a dollar, you should think, are you doing Maimonides' thing? Are you teaching them how to fish? Or are you just simply perpetuate them? And so, you know, it's too bad we don't follow those rules because they really are incredibly important to the whole society.
But I think, let me just finish my thought though,
sure.
Too, was because I think actually, I understand what you mean like institutionally, but I think when you get down into family, I mean, that's how I was brought up, right? And that's how my parents were brought up. And number one, we're not allowed to bring our kids up anymore. We have to let the schools do it.
That's a good idea.
But it seems to me that it's just this basic, you're not even supposed to think that. Do you disagree, Jeff? I mean, we're not even supposed to think like that anymore. We're supposed to be thinking about diversity and inclusion and
equity
and climate change and things like that.
Yeah. Well, that's the big danger, that people don't even want you to pass your own values down to your children. You know, Maimonides had an awful lot to say about that, because obviously if you're not going to instill your own children with your own values, someone else is going to instill your children with their values.
Yeah.
And Maimonides was extremely focused on that. And, you know, for children, bringing up children, he had a whole approach, you know, the rationale. In other words, either when a little kid is just old enough to start understanding, 5, 6, 7 years old, become your child's advisor. Don't become their boss, because if you try to impose, so you try to control your kid's life, you're just going to get one thing, hatred or resentment.
Yeah.
It's not
rebellion,
gonna go well.
Right.
Rebellion,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, I would say what's much better is to, as soon as your child is old enough, start explaining to your child, well, you know, you have this decision. If you do this, this is likely to happen. If you do this for the other reason, this is likely to happen. And of course, your experience is so much faster than your child's. your child will soon see that your predictions, you're not bossing them around. You're not telling them what to do. You're just telling them what the likely results are going to be of different courses of action. You see, in that way, you get your kids thinking and you develop in them their own ability to make decisions. And that's really critical because, like, children are like trees. You know, trees need to be watered. But, you know, if you water a tree too much, the roots won't develop. They won't develop because they don't have to, because you're flooding them with so much water, their roots don't have to go deep and they will not become strong trees. It's the same thing with kids. If you control them and make all the decisions for them, they're not going to develop strong roots. They're not going to develop a sense of judgment and an independent analytical ability to make decisions on their own. And then they're going to be so subject to all of the all these things that society is telling them to do, and it may be so different from what you hope for them, but they're not going to be able to shield themselves from that because they have always had decisions made for them, so they're just going to accept whatever people tell them. But if their judgment is developed, that's the kind of kids we want, with our values.
Well, I have to say, setting Maimonides again, it's better for you to make a decision than no decision. It's better to give them, even if it's not perfect, by giving them the choices, to give them what your values are. And then that's better than having nothing. At least you can revolt against those values. If you don't get anything, then you're lost in the world.
Right.
Well, and you're right, too. And right. And those are the kids that end up living with your parents. I mean, I think we see that, right, with some of the kids now who, you know, see them whining about having to go to work. And, you know, I mean, I remember years ago, not that many years ago, I had a boss who was kind of saying, you know, she was trying to figure out how to work with millennials because they had all these demands. And she's like, I'm old. And she's like, what do you think? And I'm like, tell them they're fired. It's like,
make it easy.
Yeah, I said, no one cared what I thought when I was an intern, you know. And my daughter has a story. She was at a thing. She was trying to work with these, and she's herself is, she wouldn't call herself a millennial, but she was working with younger kids. And she was like, they were like, well, we have to go to our yoga break and we're kind of feeling stressed. So we're going to leave early. And she's like, no, you're not. No, you know, there's no yoga break. Well, you know, how.
Go drink after work, you know.
You should drink too much after you get home from work. No. Well, in terms of how did he end up having, or was he just particularly good at it, at putting it together? How was he able to come up with all of this stuff that as you have pointed out, through the ages, you know, at least the centuries, persists as actually good advice?
Yeah, it really is incredible. Well, you know, he started from the Bible. You know, his anchor and his starting point was the Bible. But again, you know, like every good thinker, you know, people have to adapt the principles from tradition to their own times. And basically, in most of the major ways of life, you know, times, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. So all of the problems and basic life challenges in his time are the same, you know, challenges we're facing. I mean, he believed, for example, that you can't, like a child needs his parents to really be happy. Every person needs a link with God and a connection with God in order to be happy. And he teaches us how to have that connection. It's basically a mental link, you know, that you build up through your mind up to God by thinking correct thoughts about God. And then it's through that same kind of mind tunnel that you've built up to God, it's through that same tunnel that God looks down on you and watches over you. And that's kind of the channel of the divine providence. And God may give you ideas through that connection in order to resolve certain problems, you know, that you're facing. Maimonides talks about the divine overflow, which is this overflow of wisdom and guidance and ideas and love that emanates from God at all times, but we have to be receivers for it. We're like radios, you know. If our mind is not tuned to the right channel, we're not. No one's going to pick up anything. But if you are tuned to the right channel, then you pick it up. Now, how do you get tuned to the right channel? Like a radio, you get rid of the static and clear the reception. You get rid of the static by clearing away all of the envy and the greed and the grudges and the negativity. Once that's all cleared out, you've reclaimed your emotional energy. Then you can then receive the divine overflow. And at that point, things are going to become very clear to you in your life that you never realized before, like best direction for you to head in. And it's going to be crystal clear. You're going to know that this is the right path for you. And you're going to see the signposts very, very clearly. And you're not even going to believe you weren't able to see it before. But it's only after you've gone through the process that you'll be able to see that.
I mean, there is so much. I mean, you think about the victimization culture we live in now. Hey, listen, I hate to do this, but we're out of time here. We'll have to have you come back because these are just a few good rules. Where can people get, tell folks again your book, where they can find it, where they can find out more about you.
Great. So, thanks so much. It's Rules to Live By, Maimonides' Guide to a Wonderful Life by me, Jeffrey Katz, Rabbi Jeffrey Katz. KATZ, and it's available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Target. Really, it's really available all over the place. And if people go to Amazon, for example, and click, you just put my name in, Jeffrey Katz, my books will come up, and my latest book, Rules to Live By, and you can click through and get all the information, you know, about me and the book. So that is great. It was great being on with you guys.
Well, it's great having you. You've been a lot of fun, and we got to have you back.
All right, sir. Thank you for your time.
Awesome. Thank you. All the best. God bless.
Bye-bye. All right. Bye-bye. Thank you. Jeffrey Katz there, KATZ. He was great. Yeah. It sounds like we should make the Democrats read that. That should be required living. Hey, that's going to wrap it up for us today. Yep. Yeah, Sandra says, like him. Thank you very much. Charlene, too. We'll have to read this guy.
Yeah. I'm going to get the book.
Yeah, I know. We'll get one. Coming up on Wednesday, we've got Janik Joshi, CD8, grassroots CD8 candidate. The assemblies and things are coming up. So we want to kind of give him for CD8 a chance to talk a little bit about.
He's a patriot.
Yeah, he is a patriot. And we'll talk about some of the other people, too, that we endorse on that. But, hey, thank you to everybody on Zoom, everybody at BBS. And what else you wanted to thank or make fun
Ships
of me?
At sea.
Yeah. Hey, we'll see everybody on Wednesday. Thanks.